The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So tonight, I'd like to speak about the topic of right view or wise understanding. And this is the first factor of the Eightfold Path. So just to give a little bit of context for this, when the Buddha became awakened, when he discovered the ending or the possibility to be free from suffering in his experience, he understood it in what might be considered a kind of a He understood it in terms of what he called the Four Noble Truths. And that can be framed in a sort of a medical model where the Four Noble Truths are the truth of suffering, the truth of the cause of suffering, the truth of the cessation of suffering, and the truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering. And if this can be looked at in terms of a medical model, in that the Buddha understood suffering to be the basic human illness, or what we suffer from is this what he called dukkha, often translated as suffering, but is given many different translations from the subtle to the more gross. So Tan Jeff, Tanisaro Bhikkhu, who often comes here, translates it as stress, which can convey some of the more subtle levels of suffering. Or it can be translated as dissatisfaction or unease, as well as suffering. So this is the basic illness the Buddha said that we suffered from. And he said it has a cause, so it's not simply a random event in our lives. And the cause of suffering, he said, was craving or wanting. In terms of this medical model, that's the cause of the illness. And then he went on further to say that it has a cure. It does. There is a cure. There's a possibility. The prognosis for this illness is good. It can be cured. So there's the possibility of realizing the end of suffering. And the prescription, or the way to this realization of the end of suffering, is the Noble Eightfold Path. So the Noble Eightfold Path is a set of eight factors, basically, that conduce towards our movement away from suffering and towards the freedom from suffering. And these eight factors are wise understanding or right view, wise intention, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. So the first factor of this Eightfold Path is wise understanding. And this is basically what I'd like to speak about this evening. The very beginning, essentially it is the very beginning, it is said in many ways to be the beginning of the path. So wise understanding or right view is how we start on this path towards this prescription for the freedom from suffering. But there are also some alternative descriptions of this path that the Buddha gave towards this freedom from suffering. There's one common description of the path in terms of a gradual training that begins with a training in ethics or morality, virtue, and then progresses to the cultivation of mind in the cultivation of meditation and training of the mind, and then progresses on to wisdom, the culmination of the path, in the wisdom that leads us to the ending of suffering. And the interesting thing about this framework is that the Eightfold Path fits into this framework, but in a different, slightly different order. Instead of right view and right thought, right intention, right view and right intention being at the beginning of the path, instead they come at the end. So the factor of ethics basically consists of wise speech, wise action, and wise livelihood, the middle three factors of the Eightfold Path. And the training in concentration, or the training in the cultivating of the mind, comprises right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration, the last three factors of the Eightfold Path. And the training in wisdom comprises wise understanding and wise intention, the first two factors of the Eightfold Path. So we can see that the Eightfold Path forms a kind of a cycle, that essentially the training both begins with the initial stirrings, you might say, of wise understanding. But at the beginning of our practice, at the beginning of our path, the understanding is only rudimentary. And that essentially we can look at the entire practice as being a refinement, a successive refinement, and coming closer and closer to more fully understanding the truth of what the Buddha taught, to the point where finally, at the end of the path, there is a more spontaneous expression of that wisdom, where there's not necessarily any effort towards being free from suffering. We just, at the end of the path, it's simply the manifestation that freedom from suffering is what we are, and that expresses wisdom. So right view and right intention can be thought of as being both at the beginning and the end of this Eightfold Path. As I was exploring this topic, so we can kind of look at this as a cycle, and as I was exploring this topic, I found several of these cycles in my perusal of the teachings. And I think it's because, essentially, this topic of wise understanding, it basically encompasses the entirety of the Buddha's teachings, this one teaching, this one factor of the Eightfold Path. It's like a fractal that includes everything. You take or a hologram where you take a piece of it and it includes the entirety of the teaching. So the main definition of wise understanding or right view is the understanding of the Four Noble Truths. So this is, essentially, it shows another cycle here, because the Four Noble Truths includes the Eightfold Path. The fourth Noble Truth is the Eightfold Path, the truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering. And the first factor of the Eightfold Path is wise understanding. So essentially, wise understanding is defined in terms of itself. So this is another one of those cycles. So again, it points to the fact that there are different levels of understanding that happen as we approach and our practice and move along in our practice. So to actually begin on this path, there has to be some basic understanding of these first two aspects of wise understanding and wise intention, in order to even begin, in order to even step onto this cure that the Buddha talked about. There has to be some rudimentary form of wise understanding and wise intention. I think many people start seeking a spiritual path because of a contact with some kind of suffering in their experience. And they don't know what to do. There's a kind of a feeling of conflict or confusion. There's so many different ways that we suffer in our experience. Today, as I was reflecting on this, I kind of thought of three kind of categories of suffering that we deal with in our lives. There's a personal kind of suffering, one that comes out of our own personal experience, the relationships that we have, the things that we have around us. You know, we end up in relationships with people where there's anger and frustration and love and attachment. And we end up in relationships with objects like cars and houses. When if the house burns down or the car gets stolen, there's suffering around that. So that's what I mean by personal suffering. The suffering that we end up in our lives because of who we are and, you know, the kinds of relationships we end up in and the way we want to live our lives. And then there's what I could call kind of a cultural form of suffering, which the biggest one, I think, is all the many forms of discrimination that are apparent in societies. Discrimination in terms of gender, race, religion, and sexuality, and just nationality. So many wars are fought over these kinds of cultural issues. And then there's what I might call an existential kind of suffering that we experience simply because we're human. In terms of my understanding with respect to the Buddhist practice, I look at this as kind of just the suffering because all that we do essentially is see, hear, smell, taste, touch, and experience things in the mind. And all that happens over and over again is seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, and stuff in the mind. And we just kind of this continual machine processing all of these things. And at some points we touch into this and we kind of have this sense of, is this all there is? I'm sure some of you have had that kind of experience. Just, what is this life about anyway? All there is this endless dragging myself to get out of bed and feed myself and go to work and pay the bills, and then I go to sleep, and then I get up and I get dressed and feed myself and go to work, and it's just nonstop over and over again, day after day until we die. So that's a kind of an existential kind of suffering. So when we meet this kind of suffering, when we meet suffering of any kind, sometimes there's a teaching in the suttas where the Buddha said when one meets suffering, it leads to either bewilderment or search. And I think bewilderment is where a lot of us end up. And we just kind of grasp after the next thing that we know, which is trying to find ourselves in a happy situation, trying to make our world in accord with what we want over and over again. That's how we try to function. Or it can lead to a deeper kind of search where we ask ourselves, is there another way? Is there a way, said in the suttas, that a person will ask, does somebody know a way or two out of this suffering? In my own experience, I did have this kind of feeling that I felt like at one point I hit bottom in my life. And I thought, there has to be another way to live. And my own approach to the Buddhist practice, this mindfulness practice, came when there was just the right combination of suffering and openness, where the suffering was strong enough, and yet there was a kind of an openness to, there must be some way out there. So this is the beginning of wise understanding, this sense of suffering as suffering, that there must be a way that it's the seeds of wise understanding, that there is an understanding of suffering as suffering. And this is actually the first noble truth, the truth of suffering. And the Buddha enjoined us to understand suffering. And that is the path through which we become free of suffering. So this beginning seeing of suffering as suffering. So often we know that we're suffering, but we just figure there's got to be some way we can just rearrange our lives, or we've done something wrong and we can fix it somehow. But there is a point at which we just see, oh, this is suffering. This is suffering. Our encounter with suffering, this touching of suffering, can start to open us up to some compassion as well, because we start to see when we touch suffering in this way that it's not just us that's suffering. That there's a way in which when we meet suffering like this, that we see that everyone has this capacity, that this difficulty in their lives, this experience of suffering. So no one is exempt from pain, from loss, from illness, from death. When our desire to end our own suffering does not come at the expense of others, then we can say we have the beginnings of the right, wise intention towards movement on the path, a wise way to move in the world. So these initial stirrings of wise understanding and wise intention are what begin us on our journey. But at the beginning, they are not complete. It's not a full understanding of the Four Noble Truths yet, but it's enough. It's enough to get us started. And if we have the opportunity to hear some teachings, we can be inspired to move forward on the path. So that brings me to the conditions that support wise understanding, that support the arising of wise understanding. And the teachings say there are two main conditions that support wise understanding. And these are hearing the truth and wise attention. So this hearing the truth is basically hearing, it's sometimes said it's the hearing of a teaching that proclaims the possibility for freedom from suffering. So the teaching of liberation. So when we come in contact with a teaching that says, yes, it's possible to end suffering, that can create some faith. It can create a sense of possibility, of opening. And again, for me, what happened in that moment when I began my journey on this path, the suffering was there. There was this sense of search, but that's not enough, actually. Those two are not enough. We need to, at that moment of openness and suffering, come into contact with a teaching that has the possibility of leading us out of the suffering. And I was fortunate enough at that time in my life to have somebody send me a book on the Buddhist teachings. And it was like, oh, wow, this is different. This is something I think I'll work with. This is something I'm going to try. And what the book that I was sent actually was recommending was mindfulness, which is the basic teaching of wise attention, the second condition that supports the arising of wise understanding. So so the definition of wise attention in the Buddhist texts has another one of those cycles in it, another one of those loops. There's one particular sutta where the Buddha describes how a person attends when they attend wisely. And it says, when one attends wisely, one sees, one understands, this is suffering. One sees, one understands, this is the cause of suffering. One understands this is the cessation of suffering, and one understands this is the path leading to the cessation of suffering. So again, we're back at essentially what amounts to the statements of the Four Noble Truths. The truth of suffering, the truth of the cause of suffering, the truth of the path of the cessation of suffering, and the truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering. And when I first read this, it didn't make much sense to me. It's just like, well, it's just restating the Four Noble Truths. But when I looked at it a little more closely, I began to see that it's pointing to the present moment. The teaching says one understands this is suffering. So pointing into the present moment, what we are experiencing, what quality does it have? This teaching to me points to the fact that we can essentially view all of our experience through the framework of the Four Noble Truths. And this is wise attention. If we are seeing our experience in terms of the framework of the Four Noble Truths, we are attending wisely to our experience. So this means that to some extent, we can look at whatever we're experiencing as being either suffering, the cause of suffering, non-suffering, or the ending of suffering, or the cultivation of qualities that lead us to the end of suffering. And we can kind of see this, I mean, just suffering or not suffering. That's kind of one breakdown we could make of our experience. Either what we're experiencing has a quality of suffering or it has a quality of non-suffering. And further refinement of that can be if we look at our experience, we might be able to notice that there's a movement towards suffering in our experience. We see a wanting in our experience, and we notice that if we follow through on that wanting, that we'll land in suffering. I have had many experiences around this that are quite clear in my meditation practice. And I'll just describe one of them. On one retreat, I was noticing a lot of loneliness. And this kind of made sense because it was my first three-month retreat, and we don't talk to anybody, basically, for 3 months. You get to talk to a teacher about 10 minutes every 3 days. And this was my first time in this kind of an extended period of silence like this, in the three-month period. And so there was quite a bit of loneliness coming up, and I'd been observing how loneliness felt. Quite a bit of noticing the quality of loneliness and what it was about in my experience. And I'd noticed that there was suffering in the loneliness, that there was the experience of being in a state of unhappiness, of suffering. And one day at lunch, I saw a thought arise in my mind. My mind was pretty still, and I was able to actually see the thought. The thought arose in my mind, and it arose as an image in my mind. And the image was that I was with a friend, doing something that I really enjoyed with this friend. And I could see that the mind kind of reached out to this thought with the intention or this movement of wanting to get lonely by thinking more thoughts around it to create loneliness. And it really surprised me. It kind of blew my mind, actually, that there was some part of my mind that actually wanted to be lonely. It's like this well-worn groove or rut in my mind that was so familiar and so comfortable. It's like I'd rather be there, almost. But seeing that movement of wanting in that moment, seeing that, it was, and having, I think the other piece of this was that I had spent so much time in the previous days and weeks noticing what it was like to be lonely and noticing the suffering of that state, that basically the mind knew that if it headed in that direction and followed through on that wanting of loneliness, that it would suffer. And in seeing the wanting, it simply let go of that movement towards loneliness. Kind of like you might let go of a pot, a hot pot on the stove. If you're touching it, before you'd even actually feel the heat, your body lets go of it because it knows that burning will follow if you hang on to it. And it was just like that. I didn't actually do the letting go. It was like it happened automatically through the seeing of that wanting. So we see the suffering. We recognize the suffering in our experience. We recognize the wanting. And then we can experience. In this case, not only did I experience the wanting, and then I experienced the letting go of that and the release or the freedom, the non-arising, basically, of that loneliness. That's the third noble truth. Seeing that in the present moment. The other aspect of the cultivating the path, knowing this is the path leading to the cessation of suffering, is these qualities that we cultivate as we are on the path. We cultivate patience, generosity, kindness, truthfulness, equanimity, tranquility, compassion, concentration. All of these qualities, and if we are noticing these qualities that they are being cultivated, that is noticing in the present moment the path leading to the cessation of suffering. So all of our experience can be seen from one of these lenses. That is wise attention. So the Buddha, in this teaching of wise attention, points us into the present moment. This is where we begin to gain the understanding that is wise understanding. There are other teachings about wise understanding in the suttas. And one main one is around an understanding of what is skillful and unskillful, or what is wholesome and unwholesome. I particularly like the term skillful and unskillful. And there's one particular teaching or sutta around this that breaks down this understanding about what is wholesome and unwholesome into three kind of baskets. It's understanding what is wholesome and unwholesome with respect to bodily action, what's wholesome and unwholesome with respect to verbal action, and what's wholesome and unwholesome with respect to mental activity. So the first part, or the first two parts, the bodily and verbal wise understanding, is around ethical conduct, basically. The first few parts of this teaching are around what actions are wholesome or unwholesome. And they're very basic, pretty simple, that he talks about refraining from killing, refraining from stealing, refraining from sexual misconduct. And then there are teachings around verbal verbal, wise, or skillful action. And they're around, there are four kinds of wise speech, basically. And actually, it's interesting that first part of ethical conduct, again, we get into a little bit of a loop here because the three aspects, refraining from killing, refraining from stealing, and refraining from sexual misconduct, are the basic foundation of the definition of wise action, which is one of the factors of the Eightfold Path. The second aspect of verbal conduct, wise conduct, wholesome conduct, has four components to it. And this is the components of wise speech, which is another one of the aspects of the Eightfold Path. And these four, and actually it's interesting, I think, because there's 10 aspects of what the Buddha talks about in terms of recognizing the wholesome and the unwholesome. There's 10 aspects to these. And three of them have to do with bodily conduct, those three I just mentioned. Three of them have to do with mental conduct, which I'll talk about in a moment. And four of them have to do with verbal conduct. And as Joseph Goldstein points out, this points to us that this sphere of right speech is not a small, insignificant area of our practice. The Buddha actually highlighted several aspects to wise speech for us to work with in our life. So wise speech can be a huge area of our practice. It's also one of the most difficult areas of our practice, I think, because we so quickly move into speech without thinking about what we are saying. So the four aspects of wise speech are refraining from lying, that's the basic one. Then refraining from divisive speech, refraining from harsh speech, and refraining from idle chatter. And I won't go into these in great detail right now, but I like to look at these as ways to explore our speech as opposed to kind of, you know, thou shalt not commit idle chatter, you know. because always underlying the teachings is the aspect of intention. What is the intention behind the action? And that's really what we need to look at. And so often in idle chatter, it's kind of coming out of a, you know, who knows, it's just because we're bored or we're embarrassed, or there may not be a sense of being able to be silent with somebody. But there are times I find in my own experience that what seems like idle chatter is actually a way to begin to connect with somebody. So the underlying intention is one of connection, and that's a wholesome intention. So it really is, it's pointing us to looking at the intention underlying our experience. The last three aspects of looking at what is wholesome and unwholesome has to do with mental conduct. And this really, we can actually look at this as getting more and more subtle. The teaching going from bodily action to verbal action to mental action. It's kind of a deepening of our understanding of wholesome and unwholesome and our ability to see it. It's like, can we experience and know we're going to act in a wholesome or unwholesome way before it actually comes out in our bodily conduct? That's the easiest level at which we can look at this wholesome versus unwholesome. The next level down is speech, where it's more difficult, it's quite difficult to notice before we speak whether the motivation or the underlying intention is wholesome or unwholesome. And just a quick definition of what the Buddha considered wholesome and unwholesome. It's not a matter of right versus wrong. They kind of sound like it, you know, don't kill, don't steal, don't commit sexual misconduct. It kind of has that flavor of right versus wrong. But what the underlying or the underpinning of the teaching is about what is it that leads us out of suffering and what leads us towards suffering. And the wholesome or the skillful actions are those that, when we engage in them, they lead us out of suffering. And the unwholesome or the unskillful actions are the ones that, when we engage in them, lead us back into suffering. So the Buddha is not saying, don't do this because it's wrong. He's saying, don't do it because it leads to your suffering. And if you want freedom from suffering, these are things you should avoid. So the movement goes from grosser to more and more subtle until we finally get down to the mental movements of mind, movements towards greed, towards aversion, and towards delusion are unwholesome. Movement of mind or intentions, underlying intentions towards non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, or towards love, compassion, and wisdom, the movement of the mind towards those things, leads us out of suffering. Now, that's the area where we can't necessarily just choose. You know, when we're talking about bodily contact, whether or not we've got an angry mind state, we can often kind of control our actions around that and prevent ourselves from acting in a way out of those mind states. But when it comes to looking at our mind, that's where the refinement of the teaching comes in. That what we start to do is to observe. We simply observe when the mind is in these unwholesome states. And as we observe, as I was talking about earlier, as we observe these unskillful mind states, we see the consequences leading us into suffering. When we observe the movement of the mind towards wanting and know the consequences of that, the mind kind of lets go of it. So we can't actually do these last three movements towards wholesome. We can't actually say, okay, I'm only going to have non-ill will arise in my mind. I'm never going to have anger arise in my mind again. We can't do that. But what we can do is witness it in our experience. We can observe it in our experience, not act on it, and simply see how the mind responds when it witnesses it. I'll give an example of this. And it kind of seemed almost magical to me how this worked in my experience, because I was observing anger. I was experiencing a lot of anger at this one particular person. And over the course of years, I was observing the anger in my experience. And at some point I realized that when I brought the mindfulness to the anger and tried to directly pay attention to the anger, I would just get sucked right back into the anger. So I realized that it wasn't so skillful to try to be directly paying attention to the anger, but rather it seemed helpful to just notice it and go, okay, I see you, but I need to put you aside right now. I'm going to pay attention to something else in my experience. So when I noticed the anger coming up, I would recognize it and then just simply go to the contact of my feet on the ground so that I was not directly paying attention to the anger. I also was not really repressing it. I just wasn't engaging with it. It's kind of like just saying, okay, that anger is happening in my experience, but I'm just going to put my attention elsewhere. I put it on something neutral. And over the course of years of doing this practice, I began to notice that the bouts of anger at this person got further and further apart. That I would just notice, oh, it's been a little bit longer since the last time that I'd experienced it. And, you know, oh, it's been a couple months. And, you know, here's another experience of anger around this topic. And then one day, I noticed, wow, it's been a long time since I've experienced that anger. And I couldn't find it anywhere. Even calling up the person in my mind, I could not generate anger at that person anymore. And it was like what had happened was that the anger at that person had withered underneath. And it was a kind of, because it hadn't been engaged in, because the mind hadn't kind of latched into that rut and deepened the groove, it finally started withering. And I think I've been reading a book on how the brain works, and there's actually some support of this in neuroscience, that if you don't engage in a particular pattern in your brain, it withers. The neural connections weaken, and it can die out. And so simply recognizing the anger in my experience and letting it go over and over again seemed to have that capacity. So these patterns, what you may call underlying tendencies towards anger, towards greed, towards delusion, when they're not engaged in, they can wither. And we don't actually have to see them disappear. I never saw that anger disappear. I just noticed that it was gone. So the full understanding of the Four Noble Truths is somebody who has wise understanding, right view. And it's said that a person who fully understands the Four Noble Truths is fully enlightened. That was what the Buddha actually saw the night of his enlightenment. He penetrated and deeply understood suffering, its cause, the ending of it, and how to become free of it. So this teaching of wise understanding essentially becomes more and more refined as we practice. It will be with us our entire practice, our entire spiritual life. And the support for it over and over again is that wise attention. Noticing our experience through these lenses of suffering, the cause of suffering, the ending of suffering, and the path leading to the ending of suffering. So I have completely taken up the time. I had hoped to leave a few minutes for questions, but it's 9:00, so may you all explore and understand this truth of wise attention. Thank you.